This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. This week on the Compass, we accompany Port Gamble Sklallam tribal elder Gene Jones and about 200 others on a pilgrimage to sacred Tamanawis Rock. So now, let's go inside the Compass. On a recent sunny Saturday morning, we pulled into the parking lot at H.J. Carroll Park to find about 20 people already waiting for the advertised shuttle that would take us up to the trailhead to Tamanawis Rock for a guided tour of the ancient 150-foot monolith under the auspices of the Jefferson Land Trust, which several years ago helped secure the native sacred site for preservation in perpetuity. But when the shuttle arrived, it turned out to be only a small sedan capable of carrying five, so an impromptu carpool was arranged, even though the shuttle driver warned us that the small parking lot at the base of the trail a mile away was already full, and that parking was already tight along the shoulder of Anderson Lake Road. Sure enough, when we got there, we had to park about a quarter mile from the turnoff and hoof it from there, joining a steadily growing stream of hikers headed up the hill. Clearly the email from the Land Trust and the item in the paper advertising a free presentation by Land Trust Stewardship Director Eric Kingfisher and Sklallam tribal members about the sacred rock had struck a chord. Maybe that was because, at some 43 million years old, the rock is by far the oldest geological feature around. Or maybe it was because the place has been a sacred ceremonial site for native peoples for upward of 10,000 years, according to studies. Or maybe it was just because it was a beautiful day for a hike. But whatever the reason, the slow-moving column of humanity wound out of sight as we climbed, with more arriving every moment. As we rounded a bend, I noticed a heavy-set man wearing a traditional Sklallam basket hat and a plain white t-shirt standing off to the side of the trail using a pocket knife to whittle a grip on a walking stick as a small crowd looked on. It turned out that this was Gene Jones, the Port Gamble Sklallam tribal elder, who would be the day's keynote speaker, who at that moment was regaling his entourage with the tale of how the tribe, working closely with the Jefferson Land Trust Sarah Spaeth and the Washington State Parks Commission, had succeeded in acquiring the rock from a private owner who had threatened at one time to blow it up and put condos in its place.
Mommy, wait a minute.
That was a long, long struggle we had trying to get control of the rock. Mm-hmm. We had to deal with the guy that owned the property for 10 years. And when we first approached him, we asked him if we could buy 5 acres that Tamanawis Rock sits on. Mm-hmm. And he said he'd sell it to us for $1.2 million. And I told him, well, we'll start working on it. And then we talked to Betty. She's the head of State Natural Resources, Parks and Recreation and everything. And we asked her if she could help us, and she said she'd do everything she could. I asked her if we could possibly trade 5 acres of state land anywhere in the state where 5 acres that Tamanawis Rock sits on. And the guy's lawyer, we'd never met the guy. We met his lawyer every time. The lawyer said that he wanted $1.2 million. Yeah.
No land for land swap.
No. He said no, he wanted the money. And time kept going by, and after 10 years, the guy come in here and he strip-logged. He owned 62 acres here that Tamanawis Rock sits on, so he offered to sell all 62 acres for $1.2 million. And,
after logging it?
Yeah. And so he called Betty. Betty called Sarah. Sarah's the head of Jefferson Land Trust. Sarah called me and asked me, what do we do now? And I told her, we got to have our people go in and assess the property and find out how much it's really worth, because they took all the timber and everything all off. So the state guys came in and cruised the property, and they said it's worth $600,000, not $1.2 million. And so we said, okay, offer him that much, and he'll jump on it. He did.
All right. A success story.
Yeah, so we... Jefferson Land Trust, we had five organizations all working together trying to get this property. And so Jefferson Land Trust done a lot of fundraising. We made over $200,000, but we needed $400,000 more. And we didn't know where we were going to get the money. And we had a meeting down at Jamestown, and a guy from the Bullet Foundation came. Yeah, he happened to be sitting right by me. And everybody spoke. And finally they said, we want to hear from Gene. So I got up and I held the last one to speak. And that guy asked me, how much money are we looking at? And I told him, we need over $400,000 to swing the deal. And he picked up his briefcase and set it on the table, pulled out his checkbook, and he said, I can help you. So he wrote a check out for $400,000. Man, I was almost in tears. I held that check up. I said, we got it, we got it, we got it. And everybody was so happy. And so I give the check to Sarah, and Sarah give it to Betty, and Betty give it to Heidegerken. So Heidegerken give her the title. And Sarah called me and told me, well, we finally control it. So we can start protecting it now. And we're really proud that our people own this 62 acres and Tamanos Rock.
What's the significance of the rock to the school?
The Tamanos Rock is always been the most sacred place for all of our native people. Whenever anyone needed spiritual help or guidance or anything, they'd come and talk to our people. And my grandfather, his name was Jacob Jones. He was one of the first people that was taken, people that need spiritual help, up to the rock. And because it's so close to Anderson Lake, they're able to go and climb up on the rock and pray, fast and pray, and they could go and bathe over in the lake and cleanse themselves every day. And so it's been the most sacred place for all of our people.
And why is that? I mean, what's the history or the mythology?
The word Tamanos in our language means guardian spirit. And so when you get up there, you'll see that there are little caves in back of the, and down in front of the rock and behind it. And when my grandpa brought me up here in 1950, and I was only five, and I wanted to go play in them caves because I wanted to know what they're all about. And my grandpa told me, you don't go play in them caves, Kawa. He said, them are the homes of the spirits of your ancestors. They dwell there. They live there. You don't go disturbing them. And so there went all my curiosity.
How often have you come up here over the years?
Probably from 8 to 10 times a year. There's people from all over come, and a lot of our people have lost their identity. They don't know who they are. They don't know where they're going because they don't know where they're from. And so they come looking for guidance, and we take them up on the rock, and we tell them, when you go up there, you go up there to fast and pray. The only thing you're allowed to bring is water. you bring a gallon of water. And the old people used to bring them hard baskets or a bentwood box, something that would hold water. And you go sit up there and fast and pray for three days. And you would get the guidance, the help that you needed in that time period. And back when I first came up here with my grandpa, it was in 1950. And I was only five, and he was, I don't know how old he was then, but he was probably pretty close to my age now. And he climbed right up on the rock like it was nothing. and he said, come on now, I'm going to show you what you need to see. And you get up there, and it's beautiful. You can see everything. You can see how the Hood Canal goes. Man, on a clear day like this, you can see everything. And it really makes you feel good. You know you're in a sacred place when you're up there. And when we were trying to protect the rock, I got friends all over, other Native friends. So I contacted seven of my friends from seven tribes, and I had them bring seven rocks that their spiritual people prayed over. And me and my sons had backpacks, and we packed them rocks, and we climbed up on top, and we'd done a ceremony. That's where I first met Betty from DNR. She was really loud, obnoxious little lady. And she'd come, and I was up there praying over them rocks, and I'd say a prayer, and we'd place the rocks, and I'd sing a song, and then we'd move to another place and place them rocks, and so they're placed all over. And it was when I was praying, and that lady came, and she was saying, "What's going on? What's going on here? Why is it so quiet?" And my wife don't like loud people, and she ain't that big herself. She's only about 5'2", but she said, "Hey, shut up, my husband's up there praying."
So were you always able to come here even when it was in private hands? I mean, the owners allowed?
Yeah, I never got to meet Mr. Heidegerken himself, and the only one, like I say, the only one I met was his lawyer, and I met him three times. But I got to know Sarah real well and Betty real well. And Betty, when she heard we were doing a demonstration here, and we were placing them rocks up on the top of the rock, and she come and she expected to see us natives tying ourselves to the trees and to the rock and everything. She said, "You can tie yourself to the rock." I told her, "No, only white people do that."
At this point, Land Trust Stewardship Director Eric Kingfisher, who had taken a large group up another trail for a geology presentation, returned to lead the way to the rock. I continued talking with Jones as we climbed.
I was thinking we could go down the trail now, down to the base of the rock. Does that feel like the next good step? All right, so, cool.
So what kinds of guidance would you come here seeking? I mean, would it be about sort of major life decisions, or are you looking for?
A lot of people come from different tribes, and they need spiritual guidance. And so they would come, and they used to come, and my grandfather would bring them up here, until he couldn't come up here no more. And he told me in 1950 that when you get old like me, you're going to have to fight for this rock. And I never dreamed I would be doing what I'd done. But
he knew somehow that...
Yeah, he was quite a prophet, I guess he'd say. He knew it was going to happen before it happened.
Well, and how did the rock fall into private hands?
The guy bought it, I guess. I don't know how long he owned it, but the reason I got involved was because they said he wanted to blow up the Manowas Rock and build condominiums up here. So they, Jefferson Land Trust, Sarah is the one that called me, and there was three other groups that was working with the Olympic wild salmon and the rock climbers. It was three of the groups.
So when you would come up here, would you usually come up? I mean, it sounds like you were accompanying other people here at times, but did you also come up here alone?
Yeah, come up, and each time I come up, my grandpa always told me, you got to sing three songs to acknowledge your ancestry. So you have to sing three songs to let your ancestors know you're here.
So will you sing those songs today?
Yeah. That'll be part of it.
Is it okay if I record those songs?
Yeah. I gotta rest. We're almost here.
Want a drink of water?
Yeah.
I didn't bring any. I should have.
Go ahead and run by.
So I guess you've been coming here all your life as well.
Well, since I've been old enough to appreciate what the value is of this area through my uncle's knowledge and teaching. So, I worked for our youth program for the tribe for many years, and we really worked on trying to educate our kids, provide them opportunities to come and learn about, like you were saying, learn about who they are, where they come from, what's important. And so we would come out here and hear stories from my uncle.
What's your name?
Laura Price. I'm from the Ives and Jones family, so the Jones link. And, but yeah, we'd bring our youth out here, and a big part of it was restoration, like stewardship, cleaning up. There was a bunch of graffiti on the rocks, and so we spent a lot of time finding like biodegradable cleansers and stuff, and just scrub brushes, and we came up like two different seasons we did their first batch, and then we waited for a season for the rain, and then we did the second batch and got most of it off. There's still a couple, if you look for it, you can still see it, but most of it got taken off. Then we come out and we try to get rid of some of the scotch broom and stuff like that too. So just trying to help those kids connect and to understand that this is a place we need to protect and preserve and to practice coming to, because this is a sacred site. That's part of our history, that's part of our culture, part of our being. So
have you come out here personally and fasted and spent that kind of time?
No, I don't have that knowledge of how to do it properly, so that's something that we could learn more about. Right now, from what I've learned, the lake's not very clean. So you can't quite bathe in there. So that might be a new restoration project. But we've come out here on several other occasions for other reasons. So how many people are here? Did anybody do a head count?
Are you being
more.
A guide?
I don't know if we're all going to fit, to be honest.
That's okay. No, I just keep keeping the...
Uncle Jane, I don't think we're going to fit. We're not going to fit down there.
This thing was going to be this big.
No, I thought it'd be like up to 20 people, you know.
We had a geologist come out, and we come up and we showed him all around the rock, and then we went back down to where we started down there, and he got this big piece of paper, like butcher paper, and he drew the formation of Tamanos Rock, and he said that, you know, how the plates come together like that, and he said that there was a, must have been a little tunnel or something that allowed all that lava to come up, and it came up and it formed Tamanos Rock. And he said it's over 46 million years old. Our people have been coming here for ever since it was formed, I guess. And I wondered about, you know, you look around and you see them caves behind the rock and in front of the rock. And the only place you see them is down by the beach, or where the salt water is. And our people have stories about the Great Flood, and we thought the flood must have came up and washed some of them caves out. That's how they got here, I guess.
We have scientific proof of carbon dating for different village sites that date back to 15,000 years too. And recently we've had one that we just had a core sample done. It was 1,700 years, just really close to where we live. So
did
there's
you
been
say
carbon
15,000 years ago?
Chewitzen, over in Port Angeles.
Does your tribe have a tradition about how they got to the Americas? Did they come across the Bering Land Bridge? Did they come by boat?
No. I don't know. Our people have a lot of different creation stories about how our people got here. And our tribe has a story of a creature we called it the Spirit Hawk, and how he flew around the universe and collected people here and there, and then when he come to try to populate Earth, and he come down, and when he hit so hard that he broke his legs off.
Oh.
And he had people in his mouth, and he had people in his talons. It hurt him so much, he screamed, and when he screamed, he spit them people out. And so our Salish people are scattered all over. As far south as down around Yakima, and some of the Colvilles is part of our Salish group, and then there's a bunch up in Canada. We all speak the same language, almost the same language.
Do you? Okay.
Yeah. And we found that out when we went to Bella Bella in 1993. Our canoe from Little Boston paddled from Little Boston up to Bella Bella.
So you can understand each other?
Yeah. I went to some of their classes that they had when we stopped along the way, and they had some elders teaching the language, and I went and listened. I said, wow, man, a lot of them words are just like ours. Yeah, it was pretty neat. That's when my hair was black and I was a little bit younger. And with the good old days, that was back in 1993, so that was quite a while ago.
As we stood talking at the side of the trail, a continuous line of hikers filed by for 10 or 15 minutes before our small group followed, at the end picking our way down a series of steep switchbacks to arrive at the base of the towering rock, where a huge crowd had gathered to hear Kingfisher continue his geology lesson.
Observe. The other thing that people have been pointing out is the big holes, the caves, right? So how are those formed? Well, the geologists tell us that the caves were formed by just areas that were less consolidated, less cemented portions of this earth and ash flow. It's sort of just less consolidated dust and ash. And over the millions of years, that has just eroded away from the wind and weather. And probably glacial outwash, and so that's the explanation they give us. There's a cultural relevance to those as well that maybe Gene will share, but they do ask people not to go in them. So where we're standing here is the reason we're standing here. The fact that we can stand here is because of all those many years of effort, and really Gene represents that whole story. Probably more than anybody. He really was a champion of that whole thing. And I'm just really glad you could be here, Gene.
After Kingfisher introduced him, Jones told many of the stories he had told on the way up the hill to an appreciative audience. And then, as is the tradition taught to him by his grandfather so many years ago, he sang three songs. Here's the first of them.
This is the Salish National Anthem now, and it was written by Chief Dan George. And I was privileged to sing this song on our trip to Bella Bella in 1993. I got to sing with the people from Squamish, Vancouver, BC. I sang with their group.
With Sklallam Tribal Elder Gene Jones and about 200 others at Tamanos Rock, this is Steve Evans reporting for KPTZ Community Radio News.